And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
What's good, everybody? Brought to you by our good friends at Skip. This is another edition of the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. With the NHL trade deadline now in the rearview mirror, the fantasy playoffs just around the corner. It's Monday. We'll hop into the mailbag portion of the show as well. Get to your questions. Got a big-time guest on today's show. But nonetheless, it's Nick Elberg and Anna Dua with you. What's going on, Anna?
It's great. It's a great day here in New York. Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL, bringing this episode. And I am so excited to welcome this guest, my close friend, Johnny Lazarus. How are you doing, Johnny?
What's up, guys? It's an honor to be here. I made my bed in the background, and I'm not in Grand Central Terminal like I was the last time. So really happy to have my beautiful setup here in Brooklyn and talk to you guys this morning.
Well, first and foremost, before we get buried and never come back on Thursday for this show, we want to extend a hearty congratulations to our captain, Pete Jensen. He and his wife welcoming in their second child on Friday. I love this because I love trades. How about a deadline, baby, eh, Anna?
Yeah, I actually put some, not official money down, but I put a quote-unquote bet down for when this baby was going to be born. And I said right before the trade deadline on Friday, it was 2 minutes after. So I was pretty close.
So congratulations to Pete. And we look forward to having him back on these airways very, very soon. But hey, we had to go big. I mentioned it off the top. Johnny, Patrick Kane, what's going on, buddy? I thought you guys were going undefeated with getting him.
I'm not one of those concerned Ranger fans. Patrick Kane is going to figure it out. He's always figured it out. He's on the line with Artemi Panarin, and he hasn't even practiced with the team yet. They have a couple days off here before they're in Montreal. I think they'll get used to one another. You know, it's been 7 years since Kane and Panarin have been on a line together. But also, I was actually at the game on last Thursday against Ottawa, and you could just tell that a lot of these guys were deferring to Kane. You know, it's hard to really step on an ice with 88 and not want to give him the puck every time you see him. But it was so cool just being in the garden and seeing him wear the Ranger uniform as someone, you know, I grew up watching and wanting to be. I think he will eventually find his footing in this roster. And I do think this team can have what it takes to win the Stanley Cup.
So I know they brought on Patrick Kane to really boost them in the playoffs, but a conversation that I've been hearing a lot right now is more than ever, it really matters where you end up in the Metro to head into this postseason, right? Some years in the past didn't matter if you had the first spot or not. This year, whoever has the first spot in the Metro has a way easier ride to the second round of the playoffs. Johnny, do you really think that matters a lot right now? Do you think Patrick Kane can get it done, or do you think the Rangers are going to end up in third?
So I'm actually going to let you guys in on a little secret. I'm rooting for the Devils to win the Metropolitan Division. Oh. I actually was vocal about that on this week's Blue Crew Pod. I am terrified of facing the New Jersey Devils in the first round of the playoffs. I think it's a lose-lose for the Rangers. If they win, it's like, okay, the Devils were new to the playoffs. You know, they have this younger core that has no experience. And if they lose, you'll never hear the end of it in this area. So I am rooting for the Devils to win the Metropolitan Division. I think the Rangers match up really well against Carolina. And to your point, Anna, there's by no means an easy path, I think, to the Stanley Cup final in this Eastern Conference. I've been super high in the Buffalo Sabres, and the Devils, if they do win the division, they might end up playing a team like Buffalo, who's got one of the best offenses in the NHL. They're third right now with Tage Thompson, Jeff Skinner, Alex Tuck, who's out with injury, but he'll be back pretty soon. I think this Eastern Conference is stacked. It's you know, it's obvious to everyone who watches hockey. There's no secret. It's going to be a really tough dogfight type battle to get to the Stanley Cup final out of the East. But back to your original question, whoever wins first place in the Metropolitan Division, they'll have home ice, sure, and that's great. But I don't think there's any easy path to get out of the Eastern Conference this year.
By the way, I thought it was a cheeky pickup by Buffalo to get Jordan Greenway, and we'll see how he fits in, especially with Alex Tuck out of that lineup. I thought a nice little cheeky play by them, and they've been on such a run. So have the Ottawa Senators. But you mentioned the New Jersey Devils, Timo time. It finally happened. I think it took like 20 days before, you know, really got together. They got that deal done with San Jose. What do you think of that fit in New Jersey?
Well, I'm pretty pissed they didn't send Dawson Mercer the other way, because I know Anna Dua would have been heartbroken about that one. But I think the Devils somewhat fleeced San Jose in that deal. The fact that they didn't really give up so much to get Timo Meier. And listen, I think the Devils actually, when you look at it at the end of the day, I think they won the deadline. You know, it was pretty obvious that Meier was going to go there. But I think the way, if we look at all the trades, the way the Devils just had someone come in that perfectly fits the mold of their team. You know, a team like the Rangers trying to figure out where can Tarasenko somewhat fit, a team like Boston who has their, you know, their act together, but did they really need to change things up going into the playoffs with how good they were in the first half of the year? You know, a team like Ottawa definitely got better with Chychrun, but he's someone who's injury prone. As we saw in the first game against the Rangers, he went down for, you know, a pretty decent amount of time there, although he's recovered from that. But as far as the Devils go, adding Timo Meier, I think the way this team plays, they're, you know, a high paced offense. They're very, very strong defensively as well. You know, a top five offense, top five defense, great power play. And they're so, you know, speedy and skilled up front. And Timo Meier just adds that goal scoring threat to their lineup. You know, we saw him play with Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt last night in Arizona, and he scored a goal in the first 10 minutes of the game. You know, what more could you ask for? But as far as putting the right pieces to the puzzle together, I think the Devils by far won the deadline.
You actually set me up perfectly because I was about to get us into a game of winners and losers. So you gave me your winner. For me, my winner is actually Boston before I ask you who your loser is, just because Boston's one of those teams. They're at the top of the league. They're having a ridiculous season. They're going after that win record in the NHL. And they're like, you know what? We can still become better. And they did become better. I think the pieces they add make them only stronger, whereas I hoped a team like Carolina might have followed the same strategy and they didn't. For me, my loser is the Pittsburgh Penguins. I just don't know what they're doing there. I think we have this kind of mentality about a couple of teams in the NHL right now where they're half in, half out. They're trying to make a run for it, but they're not necessarily committed to going all the way. They're not getting all the pieces they need to, but they're trying to do their veteran guys a bit of justice. So for me, they're my loser. Johnny, who's your loser at this deadline?
I think Nick's going to agree with my loser too, because we were both pretty high on this team going into the season, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. Like, what are they doing over there? Nick and I, you know, I remember in our fantasy show before the season started, we talked about how, you know, under Bruce Boudreau and all the skill on their roster, they could be a high flying offensive team. And Quinn Hughes has been one of those guys too. And it's quiet that he's the fastest defenseman in 200 points in NHL history. And that's not really being talked about because everything going on in Vancouver right now. But, you know, they had a ton of skill on that roster and they seem like they want to be in this rebuild, but they didn't really get rid of anybody. Like, how did Brock Besser not go anywhere during the deadline? I actually thought Besser would be a team that Pittsburgh would pick up. I know there was rumblings about that. So I do agree with you, Anadua, about Pittsburgh being losers too. But Vancouver, man, are they in a rebuild? Are they not? What's going on there? Like there's so many question marks around that organization.
It's a zoo. Like, there's no other way to sugarcoat it. It's a zoo. The only big time transaction they make at the deadline is pick up Philip Hronek and actually deal a first round pick. It's like, you're either committed to this rebuild or you're not. I'm with you on that Vancouver front. I would throw Philadelphia into that conversation as well. I just don't know if Cliff Fletcher is equipped enough to do that job. That's all I'm going to leave it at. We'll get to more in the offseason, but Philadelphia is a train wreck right now. As for winners, I would probably side with Anna because the best team in the league got even better. Mm-hmm. Dmitry Orlov, 5 games, 3 goals, 6 assists. Love the Hathaway pickup. And then the cherry on top to me was Tyler Bertuzzi. He's like the type of player that you want in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's going to drag you into the fight. Going to play on the third line, assuming full health for guys like Hall and Foligno. But he gets an assist in his debut, a 4-2 win against the New York Rangers. And for me, there's no doubt, Johnny, that is the barometer, the gold standard for this league as we head into the Stanley Cup playoffs is the Boston Bruins. I just come away impressed with them. You know, from a betting point of view, I always like to fade them in some spots, the Rangers included, and I just don't win.
I placed a bet on the Calgary Flames before the start of the third period when Boston was in Calgary. They were up 2-1, but they were being outshot like 40-10. Yeah. And Calgary scores 2 goals in the first like 5 minutes of the third. And I'm like, oh, what a genius bet by Johnny Lazarus there. And then Boston breaks my heart, scores a tying goal, and then ends up winning it in overtime after being outshot. I think it was like 48-14 was the final. So even when Boston's not at their best, they're still finding ways to win. And that's the scariest part, I think, about them. And that's what good teams do, right? They always find ways to win. And this Boston team, you know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, we've seen the President's Trophy winners in the past, you know, going back to 2013, the Blackhawks were the last team to win the Stanley Cup after winning the President's Trophy. If these teams don't face adversity in the regular season, once it smacks them in the face in the playoffs, not all of them are able to respond. But this Boston team might be able to with that strong core of Marchand, Bergeron, Krejci, McAvoy now, who's been there for, you know, about 5 years. So it's going to be a tough task to beat the Bruins in the playoffs, I think, but it's possible.
If there's one thing I've learned so far in my life is whatever Johnny says, whatever team he's siding with publicly, go the opposite. Yeah. Go the opposite. It's a guaranteed money mine. But now shifting over, I want to talk a little bit about a team that everyone's always consistently high on, but I'm kind of worried right now, guys, the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I was watching their game against Carolina yesterday. Yeah. My goodness. My goodness, 4 shots on goal across 2 periods. Something's going on there. Are they the Tampa we know and love, or has something changed in the waters?
Well, to me, Tampa Bay is right now just getting no secondary scoring. And that's kind of been their bread and butter, is how deep their roster is. You know, the last couple of years, as they went on those, you know, immaculate playoff runs, they went to 3 straight conference finals. And, but this is the case, right? Like Tampa Bay, we always sleep on them in the regular season. And, you know, it's funny, you know, dating back to that preseason draft, when I picked up Steven Stamkos, we all agreed that Stamkos is like the most underrated player in the NHL, which makes no sense because he's been one of the best goal scorers in the league for the last decade plus. But when you look at the last 5 games for this Tampa Bay Lightning team, they're only getting scoring from that top line. Steven Stamkos has a goal and 3 assists. Braden Point has 4 goals, 2 assists. And Nikita Kucherov has 1 goal and 4 assists. And the rest of the lineup hasn't really put in the puck. So this Tampa team, you know, like I said, their bread and butter is their secondary scoring and just how deep they are. And they're not getting the contributions from the guys they need throughout the lineup. So that's what's going to cost them in the long run if they don't find the scoring. And Vasilevsky obviously hasn't been at his typical, you know, best goalie in the NHL self. But he's always a guy that'll find his game when it matters most.
Nothing to see here, guys. I know what you're saying on Vasilevsky. 14 goals in the past 3 outings, 4 more and 4-7, which is tough to see for a fantasy owner, fantasy playoffs just around the corner. But there's nothing to see here. They do this every year. I know they're winless in 5 for the first time since 2014, but I'm not really concerned. See John Cooper push some buttons. He benches his superstar in that game again. His superstar is plural in that game against Buffalo. But I'm not reading as much into it as a lot of other people are. Like, Tampa's in that select group of teams where it doesn't matter what they do in the regular season. They care more about the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I get it. They know they're going to get there. So that's my piece on Tampa. I know people are going to make a big conversation this week about it, and they're going to stomp a couple teams, and we're going to forget about it. But some of the deadline winners, Johnny, I think it's all about dominoes too, right? Like, for instance, you look at who the Leafs pick up. O'Reilly gets hurt, so we'll monitor that in the next couple of days. But like a guy like Erik Gustafsson, who is running that first power play unit for Washington, he's not getting that exposure anymore. I think he's droppable with the Leafs. I think his value clearly diminished. You know, Jacob Chychrun finally gets traded, goes to the Ottawa Senators. Love the boost in value there. And most importantly, I think you have to think outside the box what it means for a team to get a guy like Chychrun, who's really, really strong defensively. I actually like it the most for Ottawa's netminders, Johnny.
I completely agree. And just back to your Tampa point, I know you're trying not to sleep on Tampa because the Leafs are going to play them in the first round. You're
going to lose to them too.
Yeah, you don't want to overlook them. But Ottawa, I mean, they're a team that's been super hot the last week or so. You know, they came in and played a really strong game against the Rangers. Their goaltending has been a huge question mark, right? They've gone through 5 goalies this year or something like that. You know, Cam Talbot, is he a guy that can get them over the hump? Talbot has been one of those fringe number one, number two goalies, I think, in the NHL the past couple of seasons, where he's earned that number one spot in multiple organizations, but he's never really, you know, gone on a deep playoff run. So this Ottawa team, if it's not this year where they make the playoffs and make some noise, it's definitely going to be next year, because they have so many young, talented guys. Like Tim Stützle is incredible. He's actually become one of my favorite players to watch. A Long Island native and Shane Pinto, who's become a prolific goal scorer, it seems, in the NHL, playing, you know, great in that bumper position on the power play. Claude Giroux, a guy who's established himself for quite a long time in the NHL. And then Brady Tkachuk at the helm. I mean, listen, if there isn't a villain right now in the NHL, Brady Tkachuk is certainly trying to fill that role, it seems, because every opposing building he goes into and he scores, he is letting the fans know. I mean, he had a goal in MSG that was eventually waved off, but as soon as he tapped that puck in, he went right to the crowd and he was, you know, he was flexing his muscles and making some noise and throwing some chirps at the crowd. So Brady Tkachuk is one of those guys, it seems, that you love to hate. And, you know, this Ottawa team, they're going to make some noise in the next coming years, I think, Nick. So I completely agree with you.
Shifting on over to a little bit of fantasy here with the Senators. I know we told a lot of people to hold on to Chychrun, but we actually got a fan question where someone said they already have Shabbat and was holding on to Chychrun. What do they do? Do they keep both? Do they drop Shabbat? I don't know. So I know Nick and I talked about this a little bit more. Last time we discussed, you were leaning a little bit more towards Shabbat and I was on team Chychrun. After seeing how Chychrun's played with the Senators so far, I like that second power play unit he's on with the team as well. Have you changed your mind, Nick?
No, and I'll be honest, like I own Shabbat and that's probably the biggest reason why, but I still think long-term it's going to benefit a guy like Shabbat not to worry as much defensively. This guy's a zoo defensively. I'm sorry to break it down that way, but he is not great defensively. So he's almost like in John Klingberg territory for me, why, you know, they Minnesota brought him in to run their power play. I still think Shabbat is going to get that PP1 look. How do you feel? Like, Johnny, I think in general, it's just a great addition for Ottawa. I love Pierre Dorion going out there and grabbing this guy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And plus, their left side is super strong, too, with Jake Sanderson, the North Dakota product, who's got a ton of skill back there as well. Ottawa's left side, to me, looks pretty solid. I mean, Thomas Chabot was one of those younger guys, you know, a year or two ago where everyone was, you know, kind of hyped on him, essentially like we were for Rasmus Dahlin. You know, I think they play somewhat of a similar style. I don't know if that's just me. You guys might agree or disagree. But I think Thomas Chabot is going to be one of those guys who forms into his own in the next couple of years. He's definitely, you know, he's not the best defenseman out there right now, but he certainly has all the intangibles if he can just put it together. And Chychrun is more of that physical presence back there. You know, a guy that you kind of fear playing against, but also has that skill as well and can score goals. I really do love the left side for Ottawa here. And I do think they will be scary if they can keep both of those guys.
In general, I just think you look at the deadline from a fantasy perspective, a lot of it had to do with like reshuffling of the deck offensively on the back end, right? You even talk about Matthias Ekholm, what that means for like an Evan Bouchard, especially with Tyson Barrie going to the Nashville Predators. Bouchard gets three apples in that 7-5 loss to Winnipeg on Saturday. Shane Gostisbehere has been a beast so far with Carolina on PP2, 4 points all in the power play, 2-2, 5 shots on goal. You know, Yusuf Valimaki, who's going to be a guy who spells, obviously, Gostisbehere and Chychrun in Arizona, has 4 points in his last three games. He's on the first power play unit. Rasmus Sandin, as you referenced, 3 assists and an 8-3 win. It seems to be a lot of moving and grooving there when it comes to the back end. I think fantasy owners better pay attention here, Johnny.
Yeah, especially for Matthias Ekholm. I think he's the name that stood out there in that little rant. But, you know, on a team that's as high-flying as the Edmonton Oilers and a guy like Matthias Ekholm who has some offensive ability, he's a guy that I would look to as far as picking up defensive players in fantasy. You know, Edmonton, obviously the number one offense in the league right now, number one power play in the league. You know, it's hard not to think of McDavid and Dreisaitl and what they're able to do. Those two are on a tear right now in their last five games. I think they've combined for, you know, north of 20 points together, the two of them. Yeah, Matthias Ekholm, I think, is one of those guys that stands out the most. Tyson Barrie, you know, I thought he was a good fit in Edmonton. Maybe Ekholm just brings more of that size factor to the Oilers. But yeah, you know, a lot of shifting around in the blue lines for a lot of these teams. But Matthias Ekholm for sure is the one that stands out the most to me.
For me, Tyson Barrie obviously dropped with this trade, but Rasmus Sandin is a player that's impressed me more than I was expecting him to impress me early on in his time in Washington. Obviously, filling very big role in John Carlson's spot. John Carlson's still out with that injury, and I really like the way he's playing the lineup. I always thought he had high upside in Toronto, just was never given that opportunity. So I want to ask you right now, given the season so far and the rest of the season, who you would rather have? Would you rather have Sandin, who's under 20% rostered right now in most leagues? So a very easy pickup and add for anyone out there, or Tyson Barrie?
For me, it's Tyson Barrie. I think just because he's more proven, if that makes sense. You know, he's a guy I can rely on more than Rasmus Sandin. And to be quite frank, I've watched a lot more of Tyson Barrie in the past than I have of Sandin, so I'm not as familiar with his game. But Tyson Barrie, to me, you know, he's been around the block a couple of times, been on some really good teams, played with some really good players, right? He's played with McDavid now. He's played with McKinnon. You know, he's a guy that I know can get it done, whereas Sandin, I think, still has a little bit more to prove. And that's just, you know, my personal opinion, but I would for sure lean toward Tyson Barrie in that scenario.
And I think you have to look at deployment too, right? Like the way they're configured so far in Washington, they just scored 8 goals on San Jose and they're running a 5-forward set on PP1, I believe. Sandin's on PP2. So a lot of his damage will have to come even strength, because that first power play unit, again, Ovechkin plays a lot, and I get it. I'd probably lean towards Barrie, but I would monitor closely when it comes to Sandin, because he's got all the opportunity in the world. It doesn't seem like John Carlson is close to a return. And I think, you know, you look at Nashville, they have Roman Josi, right, guiding a lot of the minutes there on the back end. But a really, really good question. Who do you have in that conundrum, Anna?
I'm going with the Toronto redemption arc for Rasmus Sandin there. This is the opportunity I think he just really needed. I don't think they're going to play that 5-forward power play for too long. I know he's going to get the chance to be on PP1 sometime soon. And if he just takes advantage of that opportunity, the sky's the limit for this kid. It's a really good system, I think, for players like Rasmus Sandin to develop. Washington has such a strong core group of veteran players, and they can really help him reach that next level. Whereas in Toronto, he was constantly fighting for the chance. And I thought he proved himself a lot of the times. I really did. I was pretty surprised when I saw him leaving practice that day and moving to Washington, but this is the start he needs. I'm going with Sandin.
Yeah, I think the knock on him is defensively speaking, as somebody who covers the Leafs, but I'm with you. Like, he's still really, really young, and we know it takes a while for defensemen to come into their own. He's like 22 years old, right? So there's a lot of room to grow, and I like that fit retrospectively with Washington. We talk about winners and losers, and I like to include teams that, you know, not necessarily teams that are going to be contenders, but I think we have to give some props to like Nashville and Washington, understanding they're not going to win this year. You know, we talked about Pittsburgh. We talked about Vancouver. What are you doing? At least Nashville and Washington figured out from, you know, from the get-go a week before, they're like, we're selling and that's it. And we're going to be back in the mix next year. So I wanted to give some props their way. Johnny, I wanted to ask you about the goaltending situation. There's two prolific names that come out from the deadline with a boost. Jonathan Quick makes 25 stops against Montreal on Sunday. Thompson and Blaisois are hurt. Aiden Hill is the competition right now for Johnny Quick. And then Jonas Korpisalo, 24 saves against St. Louis over the weekend. Who would you take of those two, Johnny?
I'm leaning Korpisalo. I think Jonathan Quick's on the back nine of his career. And, you know, sometimes it is good to have a fresh start, but I don't think he necessarily wanted to leave Los Angeles. I know they had a pretty tough season thus far as goaltending. I know they shipped off Cal Peterson a couple months ago, but for me, Jonas Korpisalo, I think just having that fresh start in Los Angeles after being in a city like Columbus, I think, you know, being on a team that's in the hunt to even win the Pacific Division, you know, will give him that extra boost. He looked pretty good in his debut the other night against St. Louis. And, you know, Korpisalo for me is a guy that has to prove it a little bit more than Jonathan Quick, who's already won two Stanley Cups and, you know, has the resume pretty much set in stone for him. And he's definitely one of the best American-born goaltenders to ever play the game. But for me, it's Korpisalo, I think, that's still out there trying to prove himself and trying to prove that he is a contending goaltender.
To be honest, I don't even think this is a question right now. I love Jonathan Quick, love and light to the man. He's done a lot of great things in his career. But Korpisalo is a phenomenal goaltender with such a high ceiling. And for me, really quickly, the last thing I want to ask before we let Johnny go is I want to know how high we would actually rank Korpisalo among all fantasy goalies in the NHL right now. Because for me, the guy's top 15 the rest of the season. I would rather have him over a player like Darcy Kemper at this point. And I want to know if you guys agree. Johnny? He's thinking.
It's a tough question.
You get Halak in that conversation too.
It is a tough question. I would tend to agree. But I don't know. I'm very torn. I Kemper's a proven goalie, I think, after last year. He wasn't, you know, the best goaltender in the playoffs, but he's shown that he's capable enough to get the job done when needed. You know, a lot of people say it's not about making all the saves. It's about making the biggest saves in the biggest moments. And Kemper has proven that, but Korpisalo has yet to prove that. So I you know, I want to lean Korpisalo in that sense, but Kemper to me just has done it before. So, you know, if I'm picking one or two to play a game seven right now, it's Kemper.
Has he actually? The last thing I'll say though is Korpisalo made 85 saves when it counted the most, Johnny. Come on. How are we forgetting that?
That was pretty insane. But yeah, I actually wanted to ask you guys a question too, kind of following up on that. Nothing to do with goalies, but as far as teams go that have made a lot of noise in the first half of the season that I thought would make some moves at the deadline that didn't, the Seattle Kraken. You know, that's a team that we talked about a lot this year. You know, their second year in the NHL, a team that wanted to follow the mold of Vegas a little bit after they came into the NHL and had a lot of success early on. You know, I think Seattle had a different type of outlook when they drafted their team, but, you know, they showed they could compete this year. I was surprised that they didn't make any moves. What do you guys think?
They're not going to be stupid. That's the best way I would phrase it. I think they're going to stick with the plan, as you referenced. They're not going to be the Vegas Golden Knights. Not to say Vegas is dumb or anything, because they've had a lot of success, but they still haven't won a Stanley Cup. I respect that. I think they have a price on players. If it's not met or if it's not hit, then they're not doing business with you. And that's simply put. I think they want to hold on to their assets and their capital and move forward. And not to mention, I think they're going to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I have no issue with them passing at the deadline, Anna.
I think they are too. And to be honest, there's teams like the Seattle Kraken and the Carolina Hurricanes that I'll see when they won't make big moves. And you'll hear their GMs talk and they say, we're happy with the group we have, because both of those teams have players who are way ahead of schedule in terms of development. They've had players who've had breakout seasons so far. They were the Seattle Kraken. I mean, what a turnaround from last year to this year. I think they're very happy with where they are at the moment. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to see what happens. And I don't think they're as stressed about it as other teams. So I agree with you, Nick.
That Grubauer contract's not pretty. I do love the revenge look. Goes into a Ball Arena on Sunday, pulls out an OT victory against the Colorado Avalanche. Certainly more pressure on your Broadway blue shirts right now. We look forward to seeing what Patrick Kane can bring to the table. Johnny, appreciate your time today, bud.
Thank you, guys. Always fun. Appreciate it.
The one and only from the Blue Crew podcast himself, Johnny Lazarus, guesting on this show. As we look forward now, Anna, to the waiver wire, the list, and obviously the fantasy playoffs just around the corner. How about those San Jose Sharks? William Eklund gets the recall to the NHL. It looks around him. It's like the Will Smith gif because nobody's there anymore.
That's true. And I mean, he's going to get an opportunity, right? At the end of the day, like, make the best of the situation there is. This guy's available and guaranteed every single league that you're possibly in right now. And he had a point in his season debut, 4 shots on net. He's on power play 1 right now with Erik Karlsson, Logan Couture, Tomas Hertl. And those are great players. Like, they're on a terrible team, but they're putting up points. Erik Karlsson having the season of his life right now. So if he's playing with him, he's going to pick up points as well. He's a player that I would pick up, to be honest.
My word, they got pummeled over the weekend. We mentioned 3 apples for Rasmus Sandin, an 8-3 win. But yeah, there'll be tons of exposure and opportunity for William Eklund with the San Jose Sharks. We talked about this last week, but Evgeny Dadonov now with the Dallas Stars under 5% utilized. And again, shout out to James Harden for putting this list together, for you for editing it. But the fit in Dallas, Dadonov's a guy in the past has proven he can produce at the NHL level. It's more so like, does he have the drive to do it, Anna?
You mentioned this last time. You were like, he can turn it on and he can turn it off. And I agree. He can turn it on. And I think he will in Dallas. I want to mention really quickly, I really like him on that second power play unit with another pickup. They had Max Domi. So I think sometimes it's overlooked the season Max Domi had for himself in Chicago as well. He was leading that team in points and goals this year. And I know we were all waiting for Patrick Kane to move, but I think Domi really proved the type of player he could be given the environment he was playing in with the Blackhawks. Now he's moving over to a much better team with the Dallas Stars, and he's playing with Sagan and Dadonov on the second power play unit, and I really like it for both of those guys.
All about depth, right? Jared McCann's continuing to do his thing with Seattle, so look at him. How about Jack Quinn with the Buffalo Sabres? Certainly a guy we talked about in depth going into the season, potentially being involved in the Calder conversation. Hasn't come to fruition, but still a sneaky ad right now, right?
Absolutely. I'm big on lineup position, right? So at this time of the year, you're seeing injuries come to full force and guys are out of the lineup. Alex Tuch out of his usual spot. Jack Quinn is doing a pretty good job right now. And if you're playing with Tage Thompson, given the season he's having, Jeff Skinner, who's taken another level, once again, you're going to put up points by just being there. And he has 5 points, 2 goals, 8 shots since Tuch has missed those last 4 games. So he's doing a good job filling that role. Once again, super readily available in most leagues, 7% roster right now. I think he has to be a must pick up with the Buffalo Sabres trying to fight for that playoff spot.
I like the residual points. It's always great. And I do the same in beer league hockey. Tyler Bertuzzi, he wasn't going to go. He is going to go. He wasn't going to go. And now he did go at the deadline. Detroit to Boston. What a pickup for the Bees. I think ultimately he's going to play in the third line. That's where he started on the weekend. A 4-2 win against the Rangers, picks up an apple. What do you think from a fantasy perspective, though? Because that's the situation I'm monitoring very, very closely. Obviously, he has more appeal if he's with the big boys in the top six, but still, that team is so deep, right?
The team is so deep, and I think that's one of the only reasons that you might even be able to pick up Tyler Bertuzzi right now. The guy was almost a point-per-game player last season. I think we tend to forget that as well. A 30-goal scorer in under 70 games and had 68 points in had 62 points in 68 games last season, so literally almost a point-per-game player, putting up shots, getting goals, doing everything he has to do, and he's on Boston's third line. So I think he's individually talented enough that I'm absolutely taking a flyer on him. I'm taking a flyer on anyone on the Boston Bruins right now. Well, I don't know what they have in the water there. That's what I tweeted out a couple of days ago, but it seems that any player that heads up to Boston revitalizes their career almost instantaneously. And I think you need to take advantage of Bertuzzi right now. Even if he's on the third line, worth a pickup. If he moves up to the top six, oh my God, he's not going to be available.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people actually message us on Instagram with questions about Dmitry Orlov. Just pick him up. Stop asking questions. Pick him up. The guy's been a beast. That Bruins team is so, so strong. I was going to ask you, any interest in John Klingberg, like a last minute deadline pickup? I thought it was cheeky. You know, they've struggled to find that PP1 QB throughout this season. They thought it was going to be Kalen Addison. You know, Spurgeon's had his moments, but I like the pickup of Klingberg specifically just to run that first power play unit. I think he was +3 in the first game, too.
So many teams are doing this, just picking up a D-man to add to their power play because you really need a good power play at this time of year. I like it. You know, John Klingberg has something to prove. to be honest. Like, taking away from the Minnesota Wild, just individually, he really has something to prove. He's bet on himself for the last couple of seasons. It hasn't necessarily panned out. I know he's going to be trying extra hard right now to show that he deserves a contract in a place he really wants to play. So for me, I'd take a flyer on him because, once again, look at who he's playing with, right? He's playing with Kaprizov. He's playing with Joel Eriksson Ek. He's playing with Matt Boldy. He's on a solid unit for the Minnesota Wild. They have a lot of great scoring power on that first power play unit. Why would you not take a chance on Klingberg?
I like that. I'm with that on that front, especially when you're looking for production on the back end come fantasy playoffs time. I think you take a flyer at the very least. Just a couple questions and we'll wrap, and they're goalie related. We talked about some guys, Korpisalo and Quick earlier on. Aaron writes in, Korpisalo or Sogard? Matt Sogard, the Dane's been fantastic for the Senators.
He's been great, but honestly, I'm like a Korpisalo homer. I think he might be the fourth add to Anna's list of players. He's joining Dawson Mercer, Kochetkov, and Andrei Svechnikov now. Korpisalo's number four, just because he's just had such phenomenal performances in the postseason with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He played well this season behind a Columbus Blue Jackets team that was doing him zero favors. I mean, they were among league leaders in the most shots allowed per game. And now he's moving to an LA team that has some of the fewest shots allowed per game. I think they rank fourth in the league in that category right now. So he's being supported by a team. He could take the next step quicker than anyone anticipated. And I just think, like, I was so impressed with him in the playoffs when he had his one and only postseason appearance with the Blue Jackets, that I think he's exactly what Los Angeles needs. And I think he's going to jump their standings for goalies very, very quickly. He could even be top 10, to be honest, by the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there's a reason why they picked him up with Gavrikov, and that's to be the number one goaltender. To think LA had Quick and Peterson to start the season. Now it's Copley and Korpisalo. And somebody asked that question, Copley or Korpisalo. I think we could both agree in leaning towards Korpisalo. Somebody asked Jack Campbell, drop or hold if you have Stewart. I'm dropping Jack Campbell. And I would just wrap by saying, Anna, I can't believe we did this whole podcast and you didn't mention one of your four boys now scored a goal on the weekend. Pyotr Kochetkov, what a celebration, eh?
Thank you for the shout out. Oh my God. Goalie goal for Pyotr Kochetkov. That guy just loves life. Like, I want to be as enthusiastic about life as Pyotr Kochetkov is. I'm still holding on to him in one of my leagues just in case he ever makes a return, because he might any moment. Just out of loyalty, because I'm a loyal person. But thanks for giving that shout out.
Hey, no worries, no worries. Let's look at the schedule and we'll wrap. So 55-game week here, your four-game teams, Anaheim, Arizona, Buffalo, Calgary, Carolina, Chicago, Minnesota, Nashville, New Jersey, Ottawa, Pittsburgh, San Jose, St. Louis, Tampa, Vegas, and Winnipeg. So any of the names we mentioned in the last 40 minutes or so, pluck them off the waiver wire. This is your week. They have four-game slates. And I would stay away from ads, Anna, with Columbus and Toronto, just two-game slates for those teams. And again, we'll find out more from the Leafs perspective on Ryan O'Reilly. You know, you talk about deadline winners, certainly on paper, six new acquisitions, the Leafs in better place to potentially beat the Tampa Bay Lightning at the very least in the first round, and O'Reilly goes down right away.
It's a broken record in Toronto, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing happens every year. People get excited around this time of year. Something happens in March, and now we're all in the Toronto Maple Leaf blues again. So I'll just wait it out. You know, I'm not saying anything. I'm saying literally nothing. I'm going to wait for Toronto to prove itself. I think the more we talk about it, the more we're jinxing that team.
Yeah, not to mention, I mean, not much to be told in the last 19, 20 games of the season for some of these teams, especially Tampa and Toronto. They're solidified. They know they're playing each other. Anna, great job today. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, Nick.
There you have it. Many thanks once again to Johnny Lazarus for stopping by. For Anna Dua and producer Bob Bender, I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. We'll talk later this week.